forearm. Her forehead creased, and she pursed her lips as the bandage unraveled further and further, revealing my pale, intact skin. She glanced over at her clipboard. When did this happen?
2 weeks ago.
The ER must have made a mistake. Probably an intern, she said to herself.
What?
I asked, growing nervous.
Sometimes first-degree burns are mistaken for second-degree, especially on the arms and feet, she said, turning over my arm and inspecting it. But even so, the redness usually lasts for quite some time.
Any pain when I do this? She asked as she extended my fingers. I shook my head.
I don't understand. What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong, Mara, she said, staring at my arm. It's completely healed.
Chapter 40.
Not having an itchy, sweat-collecting bandage under my sleeve was the only bright spot in the next 2 days. Without Noah, and especially without Jamie, I had even less patience for school, and it showed. I snapped at my history teacher, who I loved, and came very close to punching Anna in the face when she walked past me and banged her bag into my shoulder. She'd gotten my only friend expelled. It would be the least I could do. I resisted, barely. But my dire mood followed me home. I just wanted to be alone. When I walked in the house, I whipped out my sketchbook and went to the family room to draw. Working on the floor was always better for sketching, and my carpeted bedroom was not conducive. About an hour after I'd started, Daniel peeked his head around the archway. Hey. I looked up from the floor and smiled without feeling.
Have you thought about going to Sophie's party tomorrow night?
I went back to smudging. Self-portraits are tough without a mirror.
Isn't there some kind of theme?
No, Daniel said.
Oh.
Does that mean you'll come?
No,
I said, just wondering.
You know Mom and Dad are going out tonight, right? Daniel asked.
Yep. And Joseph is coming with me to help things get ready for tomorrow.
Yep,
I said without looking up.
So what are you going to do?
Daniel asked.
I'm going to sit here and draw.
Daniel arched an eyebrow.
You sure you're all right?
I sighed. I just prefer my wallowing with a heaping dollop of self-pity, Daniel. I'll be fine.
If it's your grades, I can talk to Mom for you. Soften the blow.
What?
I hadn't really been listening before, but Daniel sure as hell had my full attention now.
You haven't checked your grades?
My heart started pounding.
They're up?
Daniel nodded.
I didn't know you didn't know.
I shot up from the floor, leaving my sketch pad behind and darted to my bedroom. I dove into my desk chair and swiveled around to look at the monitor. Anxiety skittered through my veins. I'd been confident a few days ago, but now... As my eyes scanned the screen, I started to relax. AP English, A. Bio, B+. History, B. Art, A. Spanish, F. Algebra 2, B. I did a double take, then scanned the screen again. F. Falls between D and G on the keyboard. F for first. F for failure. First failure. I couldn't catch my breath and dropped my head between my knees. I should have known. God, I was stupid. But in my defense, I had never, ever failed a class before, and those things just don't seem possible until they actually happen. How was I going to explain this to my parents? Shamed though I was, I hoped Daniel would still be around. I sprinted to the kitchen, my face hot. He'd left me a note on the refrigerator. Went to set things up. Call me, and I can come back and get you. I swore under my breath and leaned against the stainless steel, getting fingerprints all over it. And then it hit me. Jamie. He recorded my exam. He had proof that I aced it. I withdrew my cell phone from my pocket and pressed the picture Jamie installed for himself on my phone. A ram's head, weirdo. I tilted my head toward the ceiling and prayed that he would pick up. It went straight to voicemail.
Grounded likely means no phone or computer, Jamie had said. But if I encounter an owl, I'll try to smuggle a message to the outside, okay?
My eyes filled with tears, and I threw my cell phone at the wall, scuffing the paint and smashing the phone. Couldn't have cared less. There was an F on my transcript. An F. I put my head in my hands and tugged on my face. Dark thoughts swirled in my brain. I needed to tell someone, to figure out what to do. I needed a friend. I needed my best friend, but she was gone. And Jamie was gone, too. But I did have Noah.
I walked over to my decimated phone and collected the pieces. I tried to put it back together. No luck. I took the house phone off the cradle and pressed the talk button, but then realized that I didn't even know his number by heart. I'd only known him for a few weeks, after all. The tears dried on my face, making my skin stiff. I didn't finish my sketch. I didn't do anything. I was too upset, furious with myself for being so stupid, but even angrier at Morales. And the more I stewed, the angrier I became. It was all her fault. I'd never done anything to her when I started at Croydon, and she went out of her way to screw with my life. Maybe I could find out Jamie's address and get the MP3 from him, but would it help? Did Dr. Kahn even know Spanish? The exam was, as Jamie said, subjective, and even though I knew I nailed that answer, I also knew that Morales would lie. I stared at the kitchen window at the black sky outside. I would deal with it tomorrow. Chapter 41. The next day began abnormally. I awoke starving at about 4 a.m. and went to the kitchen to make toast. I withdrew a half gallon of milk from the refrigerator and poured myself a glass as the machine heated the bread. When the slices popped up, I ate them slowly, turning last night over in my mind. I didn't notice Joseph until he waved his hand in front of my face. "Earth Tamara!" A white drop fell from the triangle lip of the milk container. Joseph's words were muffled, invading my brain. I wanted to turn off the sound. "Wake up!" I jumped, then slapped his hand away. "Leave me alone!" I heard a second person rummaging around in the kitchen and swiveled my neck around. Daniel withdrew a granola bar from the pantry and took a bite. "Who peed in your Cheerios?" he asked me, mouth full. I leaned over the table and put my throbbing head in my hands. It was the worst headache I'd had in weeks. "Is Noah picking you up? His suspension should be over today, right?" "I don't know, I guess." Daniel looked at his watch. "Well, he's late, which means I'm taking you, which means you have to get dressed, now." I opened my mouth to inform Daniel that we had hours until school started, and to ask him what he was doing up so early, but caught sight of the microwave clock. 7:30. I'd been sitting at the kitchen table for hours. Chewing. For hours. I swallowed the cold bread and my panic over losing so much time. Daniel looked at me out of the corner of his eye. "Come on," he said softly. "I can't be late." I didn't see Noah's car in the parking lot when we arrived at school. Maybe he decided to take an extra day off? I drifted towards the campus, half-conscious. I didn't see Noah in English, or wandering the halls between classes either. He was supposed to be there. I wanted to find out where Jamie lived, and even though they hated each other, I didn't know anyone else well enough to ask. Between classes, I made my way to the administration office to make an appointment with Dr. Kahn, and when the fated hour arrived, I entered his office armed with sound reasoning. I would argue for the grade I deserved. I would tell him about the MP3. I would stay calm. I would not cry. The principal's office looked more like a distinguished gentleman's 19th-century study, from the dark wood-paneled walls to the stack of leather-bound books and the bust of Pallas perched above the chamber door. Just kidding. About the books. Dr. Kahn sat behind his mahogany desk, the green tint of the banker's lamp illuminating his preternaturally smooth face. He looked as undoctorly as it was possible to look, wearing khaki pants and a white polo shirt emblazoned with the Croydon crest. "Miss Dyer," he said, gesturing to one of the chairs opposite his desk, "what can I do for you today?" I looked him in the eye. "I think my Spanish grade should be adjusted," I said. I sounded smooth, confident.
"I see."
"I can prove I deserved an A on the exam," I said, and it was true. There was a recording of it, I just didn't have it. "That won't be necessary," Dr. Kahn said, leaning back in his tufted leather chair. I blinked. "Oh?" I said, somewhat taken aback. "Great, so when will the grade be changed?" "I'm afraid there's nothing I can do, Mara." I blinked again, but when I opened my eyes, there was only darkness. "Mara?" Dr. Kahn's voice sounded distant. I blinked again. Dr. Kahn had actually put his wing-tipped feet up on his desk. He looked so casual. I wanted to smack them off and pull his chair out from underneath him. "Why not?" I asked through gritted teeth. I needed to stay calm. If I screamed, the F would stay. But it was so tempting. Dr. Kahn lifted a piece of paper from his desk and reviewed it carefully.
Teachers have to submit a written explanation to the administration whenever they assign a failing grade, he said. Ms. Morales wrote that you cheated on your exam. My nostrils flared, and red spots appeared in my vision. She lied, I said quietly. How could I cheat on an oral exam? It's ridiculous. According to her grade book, your first scores were quite poor. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. So I am being punished for doing better? Not just better, Mara. Your improvement was pretty miraculous, don't you think? Dr. Kahn's words stoked my rage. I got a tutor, I said through clenched teeth as I tried to blink the spots away. She said she saw you sneaking glances under your sleeve during your test. She said she saw writing on your arm. She's lying, I shouted, then realized my mistake. She's lying, I said in a lower, shaky voice. I had a bandage on my arm when I took the test, from an accident. She also said she'd seen your eyes wandering during in-class assignments. So, basically, she can say I cheated without having to submit any proof. I don't like your tone, Miss Dyer. Guess we're even, then, I said before I could stop myself. Dr. Kahn raised his eyebrows slowly. His voice was infuriatingly even when he spoke. Christina Morales has been a teacher here for over 20 years. She's tough, but fair. I can count on one hand the number of complaints from students. I interrupted him. They're too scared to say anything. You, on the other hand, Dr. Kahn continued, have been here for mere weeks, and you have been late to class on multiple occasions, spoke back to your history teacher this morning, yes, I heard about that, and managed to get yourself thrown out of Miss Morales's class after causing a huge disruption. Who would you believe? I literally saw red. I tried so hard not to scream that my voice, when I spoke, came out as a whisper. Just listen. There's a recording of my exam. I'll get someone to translate it. We'll play it. Miss Morales can... Dr. Kahn didn't even uncross his legs before interrupting me. Tell you what. I'll call Miss Morales in later, and I'll go over everything with her again. I'll let you know my final decision. Dark thoughts swirled in my mind, and time slowed to a crawl. I stood up from the chair, knocking it over, but my hands trembled too much to pick it up. This whole thing was beyond unfair, and I was becoming unhinged. I threw open the door to his office and heard it slam into the doorstop before bouncing back. I didn't care. My feet felt like they were made of steel as I made my way to Spanish. I wanted to crush the grass into powder. Morales was going to get away with this. I hope she choked on her lying tongue. And I could see it with stunning clarity. Her eyes bulged and she staggered around her empty classroom, putting her bony fingers into her mouth, trying to figure out what was wrong. She turned blue and made a funny hacking sound. It's hard to lie when you can't speak. I wanted to face her. I wanted to spit in her eye. But as I flew up the stairs to her classroom, I knew I'd never go through with it. I'd curse at her, though. I rounded the corner and crossed the last few feet to the door, thinking of several epithets I wanted to fling in her direction. Today's Spanish class brought to you by the letter C. There was no one in the classroom except for Jude when I skidded to a stop in front of the doorway. He was lying on the ground, pale with dust. A huge beam of wood lay on top of him, and I saw where the splinters met skin. His torso was all bloody, and some of it trickled down the side of his mouth, making him look kind of like the Joker from Batman. I blinked. It was Jude's body no longer. It was the asshole that abused Mabel lying on the floor, the side of his skull reduced to pink mush, his leg bent at a funny angle, like a hick ballerina. The linoleum had turned to dirt, and the flies choked his wounds. I blinked again. He was gone. In his place was Morales. She was lying on the floor, and her face was more purple than blue. This made sense, given my second-grade art lesson in primary colors. Red plus blue equals purple. And Morales was always red-faced. So help me, she now resembled the blueberry person from Willy Wonka. I tilted my head sideways and blinked at the bug-eyed body on the linoleum floor. Certain she'd be gone like the others if I looked away. So I did. But when I looked back, she was still there. Chapter 42. The next 5 seconds felt like 5 hours. The second bell rang and I was pushed aside by a blonde girl named Vera, toting a guidance counselor behind her. Vera was crying. "'She was choking when I got here, but I didn't know what to do,'
Vera blew a snot bubble as she cried, and the mucus dribbled down past her lips. Nasty.
"Everyone stand back, Mrs. Barkin," the guidance counselor shouted. The doorway was overrun by students freaking out. I heard a siren in the background, and soon EMTs and police were pushing students out of the way, creating a little bubble of space around the classroom door. People were crying and shoving and generally annoying the hell out of me, so I backed out of the throng. I trotted down the stairs, two at a time, until I hit the ground. I hadn't eaten lunch. I was starving and dizzy, and I didn't sleep last night, and so help me, this could not be happening. Did I even take my pill this morning? I couldn't remember. I stumbled out from under the archway onto the sprawling green. The sun blinded me, and I wanted to punch it in the face. And thinking that made me giggle. Then my giggle turned into a cackle. Soon, I was laughing so hard, tears streamed down my face. My neck felt wet, and I was out of breath, and I dropped to the ground beneath a tree at the far corner of the campus, laughing madly and twisting on the grass, gripping my sides because they hurt. Damn it, but it was just so funny. Out of nowhere, a hand gripped my shoulder and folded me up into a sitting position. I looked up. "Mara Dyer, isn't it?" Detective Gadsden said. His tone was curious and even, but his eyes were not friendly. A blur of movement behind him attracted my attention. Noah appeared in my field of vision. When he saw who I was talking to, he stopped. I looked at my feet. "How's the dog?" the detective asked. It was all I could do not to look up in shock. I shifted my head to the side, and my hair fell around my face in a curtain. "The better to hide me with, my dear."
"What dog?"
"Funny thing," he said. "That dog you called Animal Services about a few weeks ago? After I talked to you, it just up and disappeared."
"That is funny,"
I said, even though it wasn't, not at all. "Was Miss Morales your teacher?" he asked, without missing a beat.
"Was?
So she was dead, then." That, at least, was real. Impossible, but real. I nodded. "This must be very difficult for you." I almost laughed. He had no idea. Or maybe. Maybe he did? You have to admit, the paranoia was humorous. What could the detective possibly know? That I thought Morales should die and she died? It's crazy. That I wanted the dog's owner punished for what he did to her and he was? Laughable. Thinking something does not make it true. Wanting something does not make it real. "Yes, it is very difficult," I said, nodding again, making the hair fall farther over my face to mask my insane grin. "I'm sorry for your loss," he said. My shoulders trembled with the attempt to stifle my laughter. "Did you know whether Miss Morales was allergic to anything?" I shook my head. "Did you ever see her with an EpiPen?" I shook my head, then stood up on shaky feet. I was a lawyer's daughter, after all, and even with my tenuous grip on reality, knew the conversation was over. "I have to go," I said. "Of course. Feel better, and I'm very sorry about your teacher." I walked away, away from the detective and away from Noah. But Noah caught up. "What happened?" He looked unusually concerned. "You didn't show this morning," I said without looking at him. "Mara, don't. Just don't." I stared straight ahead and focused on the route to class. "It's fine, Noah. I'm not mad. I have to go. I'm going to be late for bio."
"School's over," he said slowly.
I stopped.
"What?"
"It's almost full." Noah's voice was quiet. "And last period was canceled. I've been looking all over for you." 2 hours. I'd lost more than 2 hours. I felt like I was falling, like someone pulled the ground out from underneath me.
"Whoa,"
Noah said as he placed his hand on the small of my back to steady me. I shook it off. "I need to go," I said, feeling sick, but then another hand clamped my shoulder, and my knees almost buckled. "Hey, guys," Daniel said, his voice serious. "Crazy day." I swallowed, the bile rising in my throat. "You don't look so good, Mara," Daniel said. His tone was lighter now, but there was a note of anxiety in it. I wiped away a strand of hair that stuck to my forehead. "I'm fine, just feeling a little sick." "Right in time for your birthday," Daniel said and gave a tight smile. "I'm sure that disappoints you."
"Your birthday?"
Noah looked from me to Daniel. I shot my brother a look of pure poison. He ignored me. "Mara turns 17 tomorrow. March 15th, the little imp, but she's weird about it," Daniel explained, taking off his glasses and wiping something from the lens. "She gets all mopey every year, so it's my brotherly duty to distract her from her birthday ennui."
"I'll take care of it," Noah said immediately. "You're off the hook."
Daniel gave Noah a broad smile. Thanks, bro. Here, sport. They exchanged a fist bump. I couldn't believe my brother did that to me. Now Noah would feel obligated to do something. I wanted to punch them both in the face and puke.
All right, Daniel said, putting an arm around me. I think I'd better take Mara home, unless you feel like throwing up in Noah's car instead, Daniel asked me. I shook my head.
I'll pick you up tomorrow at 11, Noah said to me, holding my gaze as Daniel led me away. There are some things I need to say.
Chapter 43. When Daniel and I arrived back at the house, my father's open accordion files were uncharacteristically strewn all over the dining room table. We heard the sounds of our parents arguing before we even shut the door. I motioned to Daniel to close it quietly.
I think you need to ask for a hearing. Opening arguments are Monday, Indy, Monday. And there's an emergency evidentiary hearing right before that. The judge is not going to let me withdraw. There's just no way.
What happened?
Call Leon Lassiter, then. Ask him to fire you. Tell him you'll get a referral. The judge might allow a continuance if he does. He'd want that, right?
I doubt it. He's keen to get this over with, I heard my father sigh.
You really think Mara's that bad?
Daniel and I locked eyes. My mother didn't hesitate.
Yes.
Nothing's happened since the burn, Dad said. That we know about.
You think there's something going on? Have you seen her lately, Marcus? She's not sleeping. I think things are worse for her than she lets on. You being in the middle of a murder trial is not helping.
Is it worth me being disbarred? My mother paused.
We can move back to Rhode Island if that happens, she said quietly.
I expected my father to laugh, or to give an exasperated sigh, or to say anything except what he actually said.
All right, my father said without pause. I'll call Leon and let him know I'm out.
My stomach twisted with guilt. I made a move toward the kitchen, but Daniel grabbed my arm and shook his head silently. I narrowed my eyes to slits.
Trust me, he mouthed.
We both stood stone still as my father spoke.
Hello, Leon? It's Marcus. Yes, how are you?
Well, I'm not so great, actually. He then proceeded to give him the rundown. I caught the words, unstable, traumatic, and psychiatric care. My eyes bored into Daniel's head. After a few minutes, my father hung up the phone.
Well, my mother's voice.
He's thinking about it. He's a good guy. My father said in a low voice, as my mother banged some cabinets open.
Daniel beckoned me close.
Listen to me, he whispered. We're going to go in there, and you are going to act like this has been the best day of your life. Say nothing about Morales, okay? I'll handle it. I didn't even have a chance to respond before Daniel closed the door behind us in one exaggerated movement. People probably heard the slam and Broward. My mother's head popped out of the kitchen.
Hey, guys, she said all too cheerfully.
Hi, Mom, I said, plastering a false smile on my face myself. I was queasy and upset and guilt-ridden, and having a hard time coming to terms with the fact that this was my life. We walked into the kitchen to find my father sitting at the table. His eyes were ringed with dark circles. He looked thinner than usual.
Well, if it isn't my long-lost children, he said, smiling.
I wiped my clammy forehead and moved to give him a kiss on the cheek. How was your day, kid?
Daniel gave me a loaded look from over his shoulder.
Great, I said with too much enthusiasm.
Mara's been helping me plan Sophie's surprise party, Daniel said, opening the refrigerator.
Oh?
Oh?
My mother said. When is that?
He withdrew an apple.
Tonight, he said, taking a bite. We're heading out in a couple of hours. You guys have any plans?
My mother shook her head.
Where's Joseph? I asked.
At a friend's house, Mom said.
I opened my mouth to suggest they go out, but Daniel beat me to it. My mother eyed my father.
Your dad's pretty busy, I think.
He looked back at her. There were 1,000 unsaid words in their glance. I think I could take the night off.
Awesome, Daniel said. You deserve it. Mara and I are going to go plan a bit, and then I'm going to take a quick nap before the party.
God, I could kiss Daniel right now.
Me too, I said, following his lead. I pecked my mother on the cheek and rolled around quickly before she could notice the thin sheen of sweat on my skin. I made my way to my bedroom.
So you guys are set for the night? My mother called after us.
Yep, Daniel yelled back. I nodded and waved behind me before turning the corner into the hallway.
We met up there.
Daniel. He raised his hands. You're welcome. Just relax, okay? You look like you're going to throw up. Do you think they bought it?
Yeah, you did good.
But what about Dad's case? He can't drop it, not because of me. I swallowed hard and tried to steady my balance. I'll make a huge deal about how great you're doing tomorrow before Noah gets here. How much help you were at the party.
You're amazing, seriously.
Love you too, sister. Go lie down. Daniel and I departed for our respective rooms. It had grown dark out, and the hair prickled on the back of my neck as I passed the family pictures. I turned the other way, toward the French doors that looked out on our backyard. With the hall light on, the darkness outside seemed opaque, and oddly, each time I approached the glass, I was seized with the sense that there was someone, something, right outside. Something slinking, something creeping, something... No, nothing there. I made it to my bedroom and darted over to my desk, the bottle of Zyprexa sitting on it. After a week, my mother trusted me enough to keep the whole bottle in my room. I didn't remember if I'd taken one this morning. I probably hadn't. That's why the whole Morales thing. It was a coincidence that she died. Choked. A coincidence. I shook out a pill into my trembling hand, then tossed it to the back of my throat and swallowed without water. It went down slowly, painfully, leaving a bitter aftertaste on my tongue. I kicked off my shoes and climbed into bed, burying my face in my cool cotton sheets. It was well after midnight when I awoke, for the second time in my life, to someone pounding on my bedroom window. Deja vu settled over me like a wet wool blanket, prickly and uncomfortable. How many times was I going to have to relive this? I was blind and nervous as I stepped out of bed and crept to my window. My heart lodged in my throat as I reached to open the blinds, readying myself to see Jude's face. But Noah's fist was raised mid-knock.
Chapter 44. He wore a ratty baseball cap with the brim pulled low over his eyes, and I couldn't see much of his face except to tell that he looked exhausted and angry. I opened my blinds, and the window and warm air gushed in.
"Where's Joseph?" he asked immediately, a note of panic in his voice. I rubbed my aching forehead.
"At a friend's house, he..."
"He's not there," Noah said. "Get dressed. We have to go, now." I tried to arrange my thoughts into a coherent order. The panic hadn't set in yet.
"We should tell my parents if he isn't..."
"Mara, listen to me, because I'm only going to say this once."
My mouth went dry, and I licked my lips as I waited for him to finish.
"We're going to find Joseph. We don't have much time. I need you to trust me."
My head felt thick, my brain cloudy with sleep and confusion. I couldn't form the question I wanted to ask him, maybe because this wasn't real, maybe because I was dreaming.
"Hurry," Noah said, and I did. I threw on jeans and a t-shirt, then I glanced at Noah. He was looking away from me toward the streetlight, his jaw tensed as he chewed on the insides of his cheek. There was something dangerous beneath his expression, explosive. When I was ready, I placed my hands on the windowsill and launched myself onto the damp grass outside my bedroom window. I swayed on my feet off balance. Noah reached out to steady me for half a second, then hurried ahead. I jogged to catch up with him. It took effort, like the swollen, humid air was pushing back. Noah had parked in the driveway. He was the only one. Daniel's car was gone. My father's car was gone. And my mother's was missing, too. They must have gone out separately. Noah flung his door open and started it. I barely sat down before Noah floored the gas pedal. The acceleration pushed me back against the seat. "Seatbelt," he said. I glared at him. When we pulled onto I-75, Noah still hadn't lit a cigarette, and he was still silent. My stomach curdled. I still felt so sick, but I managed to speak.
"What's going on?"
He inhaled, then ran a hand over his rough jaw. I noticed then that his lip seemed to have healed in the past few days. I couldn't see his eyes from this angle at all. When Noah spoke, his voice was careful, controlled. "Joseph texted me. His friend canceled, and he needed a ride home from school. When I showed up, he wasn't there."
"So where is he? I think he's been taken."
"No. When I saw Joseph last, it was at breakfast this morning. He'd wave his hand in front of my face, and I said, leave me alone. Oh, God." Panic coursed through my veins. "Why?" I whispered. "This wasn't happening. This wasn't happening. I don't know." My throat was full of needles.
"Who took him?"
"I don't know." I pressed the heels of my palms into my eye sockets.
I wanted to claw out my brain. There were two options here. First, that this wasn't real. That this was a nightmare. That seemed likely. Second, that this wasn't a nightmare. That Joseph was really missing. That the last thing I said to him was, leave me alone. And now, he had. How do you know where he is? I asked Noah, because I had only questions, and out of all of them, that was the only one I could voice. I don't know. I'm going where I think he is. He might be there, he might not. That has to be enough for now, all right? We should call the police, I said numbly, and I reached in my back pocket for my phone. It wasn't there. It wasn't there because I smashed it against the wall yesterday. Just yesterday. I closed my eyes, reeling as I lost my mind. Noah's voice pierced through my freefall. What do you think if someone told you that they thought they might know where a missing child was? I would think that person was hiding something. They'd ask me questions I couldn't answer. I noticed for the first time that there was an edge to his voice, an edge that scared me. It can't be the police. It can't be your parents. It has to be us. I leaned forward and put my head between my knees. This felt nothing like a dream, nothing like a nightmare. It felt real. Noah's hand ghosted the column of my neck. If we don't find him, we'll call the police, he said softly. My mind was a wasteland. I couldn't speak. I couldn't think. I simply nodded, then looked up at the clock on his dashboard. 1 in the morning. We passed some cars as we sped on the highway, but when Noah turned off an exit after over an hour of driving, the sounds of Miami died away. The few street lamps we passed bathed the car in a yellowish light. We drove in silence, and the lights became less and less frequent. Then they stopped altogether, and there was nothing but highway stretched in front of us, poorly illuminated by our headlights. The yawning darkness curved over us like a tunnel. I glanced over at Noah, my teeth clenched so I wouldn't cry, or scream. His expression was grim. When he finally parked, all I could see was tall grass in front of us, swaying in the hot breeze. No buildings, nothing. Where are we? I asked softly, my voice almost drowned out by the crickets and cicadas. Everglade City, Noah answered. Doesn't look like much of a city. It borders the park. Noah turned to me. You wouldn't stay here, even if I asked you to. It was a statement, not a question, but I answered anyway. No. Even though this is supremely fucking risky? Even then. Even though both of us might not... Noah's mouth didn't finish forming the sentence, but his eyes did. Both of us might not make it, they told me. Some nightmare. Bile rose in my throat. And if I... don't, Noah said. Do whatever you have to do to wake Joseph. Here, he said, thrusting his hand into his pocket. Take my key. Type your address into the GPS. Just keep driving, all right? Then call the police. I took Noah's key ring and shoved it into my back pocket. I tried to keep my voice from trembling. You're freaking me out. I know. Noah moved to get out of the car, and I did the same. He stopped me. The smell of rotting vegetation assaulted my nostrils. Noah faced the sea of grass in front of us and pulled out his flashlight. I noticed then that his cuts were still there. They'd healed somewhat, but the bruise on his cheek made one side of his face look sunken. I shivered. I was terrified of the swamp, of the possibility that Joseph was actually in it, of the chance that we might not find him, that he was missing, gone, had left me alone like I'd wanted, and that I would never get him back. Noah seemed to sense my despair, and he took my face in his hands. I don't think anything is going to happen, and we don't have that far to go, maybe a half kilometer. But remember, key, GPS, get to the highway and keep going until you see your exit. Noah dropped his hands and stepped into the grass. I followed him. Maybe he knew more than he was sharing with me, and maybe he didn't. Maybe this was a nightmare, and maybe it wasn't. But either way, I was here in some dimension, and if Joseph was here too, I would get him back. The water soaked through my sneakers immediately. Noah didn't speak as we trudged through the mud. Something he'd said teased my mind, but it melted into nothingness before I could catch it, and I needed to watch my footing. Hordes of croaking frogs created a bass rumble all around us. When the gnats weren't biting me alive, the sawgrass attacked my skin. I itched everywhere, my nerve endings alive with it, my ears filled with buzzing. I was so distracted, so consumed by it, that I almost walked straight past Noah, into the creek. Chapter 45 Tangled roots of mangrove trees sank unseen into the black liquid,
and on the opposite side, grass stretched in front of us for infinity. A sliver of moon hung in the sky, but I had never seen so many stars in my life. I could just make out the faint outline of a building close by in the darkness. Noah faced the body of still water.
"We need to cross it," he said. It did not take a genius to figure out what that meant. Alligators. And snakes. But really, they could have been lurking the distance between Noah's car and where we stood all along. So why not cross the creek? No problem.
Noah skimmed his flashlight over the surface of the water. It reflected the beam. We could see nothing beneath it. The creek was maybe 30 feet wide across, and I couldn't tell how far it extended in each direction. The grass turned to reeds, and the reeds turned to roots, obscuring my view. Noah faced me.
"You can swim?"
I nodded. "All right. Follow me, but not until I'm across. And don't splash." He walked down the steep bank, and I heard him break the surface of the water. Noah carried the flashlight in his right hand and walked a good length before he had to swim. But then, he was easily 6 feet tall.
I wouldn't make it that far.
My stomach clenched in fear for both of us, and my throat was tight with anxiety. When I heard Noah pull himself up out of the water, my knees almost buckled with relief. He shined his flashlight up, illuminating his face in a freaky glow. He nodded, and I descended. I slipped, and slid on the bank of the creek. My feet sank into the weedy water until they hit mud. It was oddly cool, despite the steamy temperature of the air. The water reached my knees. I took a step, then my thighs. Another step. My ribs. The surface tickled the underwire of my bra. I waded cautiously, my feet tangling in the weeds at the bottom. Noah pointed his flashlight at the water ahead of me, careful to avoid my eyes. It was brown and murky under the beam, but I swallowed my disgust and kept moving, waiting for the bottom to drop out from under me.
"Don't move," Noah said.
I froze. His flashlight skimmed the surface of the water around me. The alligators appeared out of nowhere. My heartbeat pounded in my ears as I noticed several disembodied points of light floating in the darkness on either side of me. One pair of eyes. Three. Seven. I lost count. I was paralyzed. I couldn't go forward, but I couldn't go back. I looked up at Noah. He was about 15 feet away, but the water between us might as well have been an ocean.
"I'm going to get back in," he said, "to distract them."
"No," I whispered. I didn't know why I felt like I had to be quiet. "I have to. There are too many, and we have no time."
I knew I shouldn't have, but I tore my eyes from Noah's shadow and looked around me. They were everywhere.
"You have to get Joseph," I said desperately. Noah took a step toward the bank of the creek.
"Don't."
He slid down over the edge. The beam of light bounced on the water, and I heard him splash. When he held the flashlight steady, several pairs of eyes disappeared. Then they reappeared, much, much closer.
"Noah, get out! Mara, go!"
Noah splashed in the water, staying close to the bank but moving away from me. I watched the alligator swim toward him, but some of the eyes stayed with me. He was making it worse, the idiot. Soon both of us would be trapped, and my brother would be alone. I felt one of them approach before I saw it. A wide, prehistoric snout appeared 3 feet in front of me. I could make out all the outline of its leathery head. I was trapped and panicked, but there was something else, too. My brother was missing, alone, and more frightened than I was. He had no one else to help him, no one but us, and it looked like we might not get the chance. Noah was the only one who knew where to look, and he was going to get himself killed. Something savage stirred inside me as the black eyes stared me down. Big, black doll's eyes. I hated them. I would kill them. I didn't have time to wonder where the hell that thought came from, because something changed. A low, barely perceptible rumble shook the water, and I heard a splash off to my left. I whirled around, dizzy with the rush of violence, but there was nothing there. My eyes darted back to where the closest animal had been. It was gone. I followed the circle of light as Noah scanned the beam over the water. There were fewer pairs of eyes. I couldn't count them now. 5 pairs. 4. 1. They all slipped away into the darkness. "Go!" I shouted to Noah, and I pulled up my feet to swim the rest of the way. I heard Noah propel himself out of the water. I thrashed in the murk, getting caught at one point in weeds, but I didn't stop. At the bank, my hand slid over tangled roots, and I couldn't get purchase. Noah reached down, and I grabbed his hand. He pulled me up, my legs scrambling against the earth. When I was out, I let go of his hand and fell to my knees, coughing.
"You," I sputtered, "are an idiot."
I couldn't see Noah's expression in the darkness, but I heard him inhale.
Impossible,
he whispered. I drew myself up.
What?
I asked him when I'd caught my breath. He ignored me.
We have to go.
His clothes clung to his body and his hair stood on end as he roughed his hands through it. His baseball cap was gone. Noah started walking ahead and I followed, splashing through the wet reeds. When we reached a long stretch of grass, he took off at a run. I did the same. The mud sucked at my shoes, and I panted from the exertion. Pain stabbed me under my ribs, and I gasped for breath. I almost collapsed when Noah stopped in front of a small concrete shed. Noah's eyes scanned the darkness. I saw the outline of a large building far off in the distance and a cabin about 40 feet away. Noah looked at me, his face uncertain.
Which should we check first?
My heart surged at the thought that Joseph could be so close, that we'd almost reached him. Here, I said, indicating the shed. I pushed past Noah and tried to turn the knob of the door, but it was locked. I felt Noah's hand on my shoulder and followed his eyes up to a tiny window beneath the overhang of the roof. It was basement-sized. There was no way he would fit. I might not fit. The walls were smooth. There was nothing to step on to propel me up.
Lift me, I said without hesitation.
Noah laced his fingers together. He glanced back once, right before I stepped into his hands. I balanced myself on his shoulders before standing fully. As soon as I could, I grabbed the sill to steady myself. It was grimy, but there was a small point of light inside. There were tools propped up against the wall, a small generator, a few blankets on the ground, and then, Joseph. He was on the floor in a corner, slumped. I had to choke back the swell of emotions, relief mixed with terror.
He's in there, I whispered to Noah as I pushed on the glass. But was he okay?
The window stuck, and I mumbled a prayer to any gods that might be listening to let the thing open. Just let it open. It did. I reached my arms through and wiggled the rest of my body in. I crashed to the floor head first and landed on my shoulder. A bubble of hot pain exploded in my side, and I clenched my teeth to keep from screaming. I opened my eyes. Joseph hadn't moved. I was wild with terror. I winced as I stood but gave no thought to my shoulder as I rushed over to my little brother. He looked like he was sleeping there, nestled in a pile of blankets. I inched closer, terrified that when I touched him he would be cold. He wasn't. He was breathing, and normally. Flooded with relief, I shook him. His head lolled to one side.
"Joseph," I said. "Joseph, wake up!"
I threw a light blanket off of him and saw that his feet were bound and his arms were tied in front of him. My head swam, but I slapped my eyes into focus. I scanned the room, looking for something to cut the plastic twist ties on Joseph's wrists and ankles. I didn't see anything.
"Noah," I called out. "Tell me you brought a pocket knife."
He didn't answer, but I heard the clatter of metal as it hit the tilted glass window and bounced back outside. I heard Noah utter a string of expletives before the knife clattered against the window again. This time, it fell to the ground inside the building. I picked it up, unfolded it, and started sawing. My fingers were raw by the time I cut through the ties on Joseph's hands, and they were numb when I finished working on his feet. I finally had the chance to look him over. He was still in his school clothes, khaki pants, and a striped polo shirt. They were clean. He didn't look hurt.
"Mara!"
I heard Noah's voice calling me on the other side of the wall.
"Mara, hurry!"
I tried to lift Joseph up, but pain knifed through my shoulder. A strangled sob escaped my throat.
"What happened?"
Noah asked. His voice was frantic. "I hurt my shoulder when I fell. Joseph won't wake up, and I can't lift him through the window."
"What about the door? Can you unlock it from the inside?"
And I'm an idiot. I hurried to the front of the concrete room. I turned the lock, opened the door. Noah stood on the other side of it, scaring the hell out of me.
"Guess that's a yes,"
Noah said. My heart pounded as Noah walked over to Joseph and held him up under his shoulder. My brother was completely limp.
"What's wrong with him?"
"He's unconscious, but there's no sign of bruises or anything. He seems fine."
"Well, how are we gonna—"
Noah withdrew his flashlight from his back pocket and tossed it at me. Then he hoisted Joseph over his shoulders, grasping behind his knee with one hand and his wrist with the other. He walked to the door like it was nothing and opened it. Good thing he's a skinny bastard. I let out a nervous laugh as we walked through, just before the beam of car headlights washed over the three of us. Noah's eyes met mine.
"Run."
Chapter 46.
We exploded into flight, our feet beating down the muck beneath us. The grass whipped my arms, and the air stung my nostrils. We reached the creek, and I turned on the flashlight, skimming the surface of the water. It was clear, but I knew that didn't mean much. "I'll go first," I said to the water, almost daring the alligators to come back. I sank down into the creek. Noah slid Joseph off of his shoulder and followed, careful to keep my brother's head above the surface. He tugged Joseph's body under his arm, and he swam. Somewhere in the middle, I felt something brush my leg. Something large. I bit back a scream and kept moving. Nothing followed us. Noah lifted my brother up for me to grab, and I managed to hold him, barely, as my shoulder howled in agony. Noah pulled himself up the bank, took Joseph from me, lifted him again, and we ran. When we reached Noah's car, he unloaded Joseph into the back seat first, then climbed in. I almost collapsed inside, suddenly shivering from the wet clothes pasted to my skin. Noah turned on the heat full blast, stomped on the gas pedal, and drove like a lunatic until we were safely on I-75. The sky was still dark. The steady thrum of the pavement underneath the tires threatened to lull me to sleep, despite the excruciating pain in my shoulder. It hung wrong, no matter how I settled into the seat. When Noah placed his arm around me, curling his fingers around my neck, I cried out. Noah's eyes went wide with concern. "My shoulder," I said, wincing. I looked behind me in the back seat. Joseph still hadn't stirred. Noah drove with his knees as his hands skimmed my collarbone, then my shoulder. He explored it with his dirt-caked fingers, and I bit my tongue to keep from screaming. "It's dislocated," he said quietly. "How do you know?" "It's hanging wrong. Can't you feel it?" I would have shrugged, but yeah. "You're going to have to go to the hospital," Noah said. I closed my eyes. Faceless people appeared in the darkness, crowding my bed, pushing me down. Needles and tubes tugged at my skin. I shook my head fiercely. "No, no hospitals. It has to be placed back into the socket." Noah worked his fingers into my muscles, and I choked back a sob. He drew his hand back. "I didn't mean to hurt you." "I know," I said through the tears. "It's not that. I hate hospitals." I started to tremble, remembering the smell, the needles, and then I let out a nervous laugh because I'd almost been eaten by giant reptiles, but somehow, needles were scarier. Noah ran a hand over his jaw. "I can put it back in," he said in a hollow voice. I turned in my seat and then choked back the ensuing pain. "Really? Noah, seriously?" His face darkened, but he nodded. "That would be... Please do it." "It's going to hurt. Like, you have no idea how badly it's going to hurt." "I don't care," I said breathlessly. "It would hurt just as much in a hospital." "Not necessarily. They could give you something," Noah said, "for the pain." "I can't go to a hospital. I can't. Please do it, Noah, please." Noah's eyes flicked to the clock on the dashboard, and then he checked the rearview mirror. He sighed and turned off the highway. When we pulled into a dark, empty parking lot, I checked the back seat. Joseph was still out. "Come on," Noah said as he got out of the car. I followed and he locked it behind us. We walked a short distance before Noah stopped under a tangle of trees behind a strip mall. He closed his eyes, and I noticed that his hands were balled in the fists. The muscles in his forearms flexed. He shot me a dark look. "Come here," he said. I walked over to him. "Closer." I took another step, but I'd be lying if I said I wasn't afraid. My heart pounded in my chest. Noah sighed and crossed the remaining distance between us, then stood, his chest against my back. I felt the length of his body pressed tightly behind mine, and I shivered. From standing outside in my wet clothes, or the feel of him behind me, I didn't know. He circled one arm around my chest, aligned with my collarbone, and snaked the other beneath my arm so that his hands were almost touching. "Hold very still," he whispered. I nodded, silent. "Right then. One," he spoke softly in my ear, tickling me. I could feel my heart beating against his forearm. "Two." "Wait," I said, panicking. "What if I scream?" "Don't." And then my left side ignited in pain, white hot sparks exploding behind my eyes, and I felt my knees buckle, but never felt the ground beneath me. I saw nothing but blackness, deep and impenetrable as I floated away. I woke up when I felt the car turn wide on the pavement. I looked up just as we passed under the sign for our exit. "What happened?" I mumbled. My wet hair had stiffened in the artificial air, caked with filth. It crunched behind my head. "I put your shoulder back in," Noah said, staring at the brightening road ahead of us, "and you fainted." I rubbed my eyes. The pain in my shoulder had simmered to a dull, throbbing ache. I glanced at the clock. Almost 6 in the morning. If this was real, my parents would be awake soon. Joseph already was.
Joseph,
I said. He smiled at me.
Hey, Mara. Are you okay?
Yeah, just tired a little.
What happened?
I guess I just fell into a ditch by the soccer field where you guys found me, he said. I cast a furtive glance at Noah. He met my eyes and gave a slight shake of his head.
How could he possibly think Joseph would buy that?
It's weird. I don't even remember going there. How did you guys find me anyway? Noah rubbed his forehead with his filthy palm.
Lucky guess,
he said, avoiding my stare. Joseph looked directly at me, even though he spoke to Noah. I don't even remember texting you to pick me up. I must have hit my head pretty hard. That must have been the companion lie to the one Noah told about the soccer field, and I could tell by Joseph's stare that he didn't believe either one. And yet he seemed to be playing along. So I did too. Does it hurt? I asked my brother.
A little, and my stomach feels kind of sick.
What should I tell Mom? Noah stared straight ahead, waiting for me to make the call. And it was obvious what Joseph was asking, whether he should out me and Noah, whether he should trust us. Because I knew that if Joseph did tell our parents the lie Noah told him, my mother would lose it. Absolutely. And she would ask questions. Questions Noah said he couldn't answer. I looked behind the seat at my little brother. He was dirty, but fine. Skeptical, but not worried. Not scared. But if I told him the truth about what had happened, that someone, a stranger, had taken him and tied him up and locked him in a shed in the middle of the swamp, what would that do to him? What would he look like then? A memory returned of his ashen, downcast face in the hospital waiting room after I burned my arm, of his body slumped and stiff and small in the waiting room chair. This would be worse. I could think of few things more traumatic than being kidnapped, and I knew from experience just how hard it would be to come back from something like that, even if he could. But if I didn't tell Joseph, I could not tell my mother, not after my arm, not after the pills. She would never believe me. So I decided. I looked at Joseph in the rearview mirror. I don't think we should mention it. Mom will freak out. I mean, freak out. She might be too scared to let you play soccer anymore, you know? Guilt flared inside me at the lies, but the truth could break Joseph, and I wouldn't be the one to do it to him. And Dad will probably sue the school or something. Maybe just use the pool shower outside. Get into bed, and I'll tell her you didn't feel well last night and ask me to come pick you up. Joseph nodded in the back seat.
Okay,
he said evenly. He didn't even question me. He trusted me that much. My throat tightened. Noah pulled onto our street.
This is your stop, he said to Joseph.
My brother got out of the car after Noah shifted it in to park. I followed suit before Noah could open the door. Joseph walked to the driver's side window and reached in. He shook Noah's hand.
Thanks,
my brother said, flashing a dimpled grin at Noah before heading to our house. I leaned down to the open passenger window and said, We'll talk later. Noah paused, staring straight ahead.
Yes.
But we didn't get the chance. I met up with Joseph back at the house. All three cars were in the driveway now. Joseph showered outside. Then we crept in through my bedroom window so as not to wake anyone. My brother was smiley and tiptoed down the hallway with exaggerated steps like it was a game. He closed his bedroom door and presumably went to bed. I had no idea what he thought, what he was thinking about all of this, or why he let me off so easily. But I ached with exhaustion and couldn't begin to work through it. I peeled off my clothes and turned on my shower, but found that I couldn't even stand. I sank down under the stream of water, shivering despite the heat. My eyes were blank, vacant, as I stared at the tile. I didn't feel sick. I wasn't tired. I was lost. When the water ran cold, I got up, threw on a green t-shirt and striped pajama bottoms, and went to the family room, hoping the television could dull the droning non-thoughts in my brain. I sank into the leather couch and turned on the TV. I scrolled through the guide but saw little besides infomercials, while the news hummed in the background. Locals reported a massive fish kill this morning in Everglades City. My ears pricked at the mention of Everglades City. I closed the guide, my eyes and ears riveted to the plastic-looking anchorwoman as she spoke. Biologists called out to the scene are saying it's most likely due to oxygen depletion in the water. A startling number of alligator corpses are thought to be the culprit. The video switched to a freckled blonde woman in khaki shorts with a microphone pointed at her bandana-covered mouth. She stood in front of an eerily familiar-looking body of murky water. The camera panned in on the white-bellied, dead alligators floating in it, surrounded by hundreds of fish.
An abundance of decomposing matter in the water soaks up a large amount of oxygen, killing off fish in the area in a matter of hours. Of course, in this case, whatever killed the alligators could have killed the fish. A chicken and the egg puzzle, if you will. The anchor mannequin spoke again.
The possibility of illegal dumping of hazardous waste is being investigated as well. Herpetologists at the Metro Zoo are expected to do necropsies on the animals over the next couple of days, and will be sure to report the results right here. In the meantime, tourists might want to steer clear of the area, she said, holding her nose.
You aren't kidding, Marge. That has gotta stink. And now over to Bob for the weather.
My arms shook as I held out the remote and turned the television off. I stood, swaying on alien feet, as I made my way to the kitchen sink for some water. I pulled a cup from the cabinet and stood at the counter, my mind reeling. The place they showed on camera didn't look exactly the same, but I was there in the middle of the night. Surely it would look different in the daytime. But maybe it was somewhere else entirely. Even if it wasn't, maybe something had poisoned the water. Or maybe I hadn't been there at all. I filled the plastic cup and brought the water to my lips. I accidentally caught my reflection in the dark kitchen window. I looked like the ghost of a stranger. Something was happening to me. I heaved the plastic cup at the dark glass and watched my reflection blur away. Chapter 47. Before. I woke up the next day in a skeletal institutional bed inside the Tamerlane State Lunatic Asylum. The mattress beneath me was torn to pieces and filthy. The bed frame groaned as I shifted and I looked down at myself. I was dressed in black. Someone kissed my neck behind me. I whipped around. It was Jude. He smiled and snaked his arm around my waist, pulling me closer. Come on, Jude, not here. I ducked under his arm and stood up, tripping over the debris and insulation on the floor. He followed me and backed me up against the wall.
Shh, just relax, he said, as he lifted his hand to my cheek and went for my mouth.
I turned my head away. His breath was hot on my neck.
I don't want to do this right now, I said, my voice hoarse. Where was Rachel? Claire?
You never want to do this, he mumbled against my skin.
Maybe because you want to do it so badly.
My stomach clenched as soon as the words were out of my mouth. Jude was still. I chanced a brief look at his face. His eyes were vacant, lifeless. And then he smiled, but there was no warmth in it.
Maybe it's because you're a tease, he said, and his smile faded.
I needed to leave, now. I tried to extract myself from between his body and the wall by pushing against the chest with my palms. He pushed back. It hurt. How is this happening? I'd learned over the past 2 months that Jude had his dick moments. Entitled, spoiled, obnoxious. Typical alpha male garbage. But this? This was a whole new level of fucked up. This was... Jude pressed me against the dusty, crumbling wall with the full weight of his body, cutting off my train of thought. I felt the individual hairs rise on the back of my neck and assessed my dwindling options. I could scream. Rachel and Claire might be close enough to hear me, but they might not. If they weren't, well, things would get uglier. I could smack him. That would probably be stupid, as I'd seen Jude bench press twice my body weight. I could do nothing. Rachel would come looking for me eventually. Door number 3 seemed the most promising. I went limp. Jude did not care. He crushed into me with more force, and I fought the swirling hysteria rising in my throat. This was wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. Jude crushed his mouth against mine, panting, and the force of him pushed me deeper into the wall, setting loose small clouds of dust that billowed around my body. I felt nauseous. No, I whispered. I sounded so far away. Jude didn't answer. His pawing hands were rough and clumsy under my coat, under my sweatshirt, under my shirt. The cold of his skin against my stomach made me gasp. Jude laughed at me. It sparked a cold, rocking fury inside of me. I wanted to kill him. I wished that I could. I pulled one of his hands off my body with a force I didn't know I had. He replaced it, and without thinking, I hauled off and smacked him. I did not even have the opportunity to register the sting on my hand before I felt it on my face. On my face. Jude's blow came so fast and so fierce that it seemed to take me minutes or hours to realize he'd even hit me back. My eyeball felt like it was dangling from my socket. The pain bit at me from